All right, welcome everybody to the Reflex Blue Show. I am your host, Donovan Beery, and I have with me via the magical tubes of the internet, Vaughn Galichka. Vaughn, how you doing over there?
I'm doing pretty good.
Since now, we last spoke a couple years ago on the show, and since then you're very prolific at illustration and design. I mean, it's amazing at how much product comes out of your little one-man shop. It's almost like you've cloned yourself over there somehow.
I've come close to that. My daughter's getting pretty good.
Yeah, it's real. It makes me. How old is your daughter now?
She's now 20.
Okay, and she can already outdraw all of us. It's she's been probably outdrawing me since she was 9. So,
I've used her on some projects of mine, so she's getting some good experience, and she'll be graduating in about 8 months.
Very nice. So there'll be it'll really be the Galichka Studios then.
Yeah, she's planning on working with me, so she'll be kind of plugging in next year.
Very cool. And is the latest big news on your studio is your new Take and Make art book. Is this correct?
I'm not sure if I'd say it's the biggest news, but it's something that I'm kind of excited about. It's what I spent all last summer working on. And once again, my daughter was a big part of it. She created a lot of the art that's in the book as well.
Oh, really? So I'm actually, thank you very much, by the way, for including me in this book as one of the featured artists using this, but it's takeandmakeart.com. What was the inspiration between deciding that we need more Vaughn Galichka clip art, which I didn't think we did until I see it. Now it's very obvious that the world needed more of this.
Well, first off, I wouldn't call it clip art. I refer to it as stock art because it's the same level of aesthetic I'd apply to like a publication if they hired me to create an editorial illustration for them.
I did not mean to insult there.
That's okay. I kind of wrangled with the publisher over using those kind of terms when we worked out the title and everything. So it's a common misunderstanding, so it's no big deal. But I just wanted to create a resource because there's a lot of designers. They're really good at design and layout, but you know, not every designer is necessarily an illustrator, and not every designer can afford to hire an illustrator, especially on smaller budget projects. So I just wanted to give them a resource that's not your average kind of stock illustration service. I wanted stuff that's more conceptual, that they can bend the image in terms of what it means and make it apply to whatever they're working on.
Yeah, and this is, it's very similar in that manner to the other books that you've done with the textures and the patterns and the borders, where it takes something that seems like it's a clip art manner, but makes it into something that you're like, oh, I actually could see myself using that. This kind of does that with stock illustrations.
Yeah, I try to make them so they're unique and kind of, I mean, one thing, you go to stock sites and they're always playing it safe. Like, it's so literal that it lacks any kind of unique aesthetic. So I tried to really embed like some distinctly unique and off the wall concepts and ideas that people can reflect whatever message they're trying to compose with visuals.
Yeah, and then on this one, you've taken another step to where anyone who purchases the book, either online or the physical book, you're providing additional artwork throughout the next, what, 5 years?
Yeah, I've at least committed for the next 5 years, maybe more. It just depends. But part of me is enjoys doing that. The other part of me is going, I'm kind of nuts for dedicating myself to that. But so far, it's going okay. We've released two of the free monthly art installments, and the next they come out about the, I'd say about the 12th of each month, I upload the next one. So if you buy a book, I provide that kind of private URL to anybody to download each month's installment. So if somebody gets the book now and they've missed the previous two, when I email them, I give them a link that'll give them everything up to that point. So
And it's not like there's not already literally 1,000 illustrations in this thing to
Yeah,
begin
there's
with.
a little over 1,000 images, so.
So after the 5 years, how many images will there be included in this book?
It'll be a little less than 2,000. It'll be about 1,800, maybe a little more.
Wow. Okay, so you and your daughter have your work cut out for you.
Yeah. Well, she was part of creating the book. I mean, all the monthly stuff I'm doing, so there was no way I could pull this book off without pulling together kind of a group of I called it my vector posse, and I drew everything and then provided the drawings to them, and they built a lot of the art in my book, and then when it came back in, I'd review it and refine it and make any changes. So we basically cranked out all the artwork over about a 4 month period.
That's 1,000 drawings in 4 months. That's impressive. That is more drawings than I think I have done in the last 40 years. So, right. So, any other books on the horizon, or are you taking a little of siesta after this one?
This summer I'm updating the Vector Basic Training with a second edition and rewriting a couple chapters, adding a new chapter, and redoing all the videos in high definition. And I'm kind of writing it in a more universal way where if somebody, I think the vector landscape is changing in terms of the tools. So, I mean, most people use Illustrator, but I think as companies continue to progress with their software, you're going to see other applications come on the scene. So I'm just writing it in a way where it'll apply to whatever application you're using in terms of the methodology.
Now, so when you're saying, do you think a lot of the reason that the vector might move on from just Illustrator is because people are doing, like, I know you do your 5 minute logos and stuff on the iPads, or is it just because technology has made it to where, like, when I do vector, it's pretty simple. I do most of it just in InDesign because it's simple enough to where I'm like, I don't want to switch programs just to do this little spot thing I'm working on.
Well, I think it's a combination of things. I think it's one is the big hang up for a lot of people still 2 years after the fact is they don't want to commit to that subscription. And I kind of understand that. And these other companies aren't following Adobe's model, so they're releasing software that initially is can produce the same results as Illustrator, and it's only going to get better as they continue to develop it. I know of a couple other companies kind of doing the same thing, and I look forward to seeing what they come out with as well. And it's just going to be more competition. I think that's always whatever industry you're talking about, I think that just ends up being a good thing all around. You have more choices, and I don't think you need. I get really. Adobe kind of gets pissed at me at times because I just
Oh, you just have to
post.
follow you on Twitter to understand that part. I've known that for years.
I've kind of upset them a few times, but like my most recent thing is I was working on a branding project yesterday and I picked a color from the new Pantone books I bought in August and I typed in the color for the color for the bridge. I was using Color Bridge so I can match my PMS or my CMYK with the spot color. And I punch in the color and it wouldn't bring up anything in Illustrator. And come to find out, you have to buy another piece of software and install it in order to get that color to work in Illustrator. And I just think, I've been using digital tools for like 20 some years now, and I've never had to do that. Why did they make it? Just frustrates me that they tend to, instead of simplifying and improving processes, they tend to, at times, both Adobe and other companies, they tend to complicate things more than what it really needs to be. So I just changed the color instead of installing new software. I was like, forget it. So
How many new Pantone colors are there in the new Swatch books?
I, they added ones that they refer to the set I bought called Plus, the Pantone Plus. And so it's only the Pantone Plus colors that if you punch in, they won't show up in Illustrator. The only way you can access them is to... you can always work around it and make a custom color, but it kind of defeats the purpose if it's not kind of built into Illustrator. It's a hassle. But you have to install this PMS software, Pantone matching software, and then somehow load that and push it to Illustrator. It's just convoluted. It's just stupid. So I'm just going to avoid those colors.
Sure. Well, I still have like decade old color books, so I'm stuck with the you know, the 10,000 colors that I've had for the last 10 years. I don't have these new ones. We're not as fancy around here, so. All right, we're gonna take a break. We'll be right back with Von Glitchko. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Vaughn, we're gonna catch you here, and it sounds like in Chicago here in a couple months.
Yep, I'll be doing a talk on copyright.
All right, and this is so how on copyright?
Yeah, it's about how to respond to ripoffs is the title.
Okay, because you and Jeff Fisher, if you follow you online, are the people I know the most. That I think the minute you hit save on something and share it, it's already being ripped off.
Well, just to give you an idea, thankfully I don't have to deal with this one, but I do courses for Linda, and we just launched one on Monday, and somebody's already ripped off that course like by the next day. So they have a whole department that deals with that, so I just informed them of it. But when it comes to copyright infringement, it's just something I've had to deal with over the years, and as it keeps, most of the time I'm not even aware of it. Other people let me know, and then I have to follow up with it. But I've become friends with the copyright attorney I work with out of Portland, and he's really great. His name's Cole, and he's going to, how do I put this? I'm kind of, at least at this point, my goal is to create a Wizard of Oz type theme, and he will play the Great Oz of copyright.
Okay. So what was the first thing that, like, what was the first thing that you did that was blatantly like ripped off, and what'd you do about it?
First thing.
Or maybe the first one you cared about where you're like, what?
Well, probably the first time that it happened, that it actually went to, one of the first times I should say, that it went to the level where I had to deal with a lawyer or get a lawyer involved, that is I had done a tribal style kind of face illustration, and I did it as a promotion for my business and sent shirts to art directors all around the country, and it ended up on my workbook page. And then a friend of mine, a designer based out of Wichita, sent me an email and said, hey, I didn't know that you sold this artwork to Kroger's. And I go, well, I didn't. And there was a company selling this temporary tattoo pack in Kroger's stores, and it had, you know, my artwork prominently as part of the little set of temporary tattoos they were selling. And so I had to contact the company, and I showed them my copyright registration and other information to prove that I had created it. And they just kind of, they basically gave me the finger and said, we don't care.
Right.
So I had to get the lawyer involved, and then 4 months later, they ended up compensating me for using it. So that was one of the first times I had to use a lawyer. And then moving forward, as each new kind of matter came up over the years, I've just learned how to, I can kind of tell right away if it's something I can handle or if it's beyond what I can handle.
And by something you can handle, I assume it means like they will actually just cease and desist, or they just didn't know better.
Yeah, it's either that, but it even applies to, it can apply to just individuals or companies who had no idea that a designer they work with had sold them something that he didn't really own. There's that, and those are pretty simple to deal with. But even when it's a big company and a big corporation, it's like I've learned how to kind of track down their legal counsel. And as long as I can show a lawyer, like a copyright registration and proof that I created it, I usually just handle those. I say, look, if you guys pay this invoice, then it's, I'm going to treat it just as if you contacted me and asked me how much would the usage fee be to use this. As long as you know that I still retain the copyright, I'm okay. If you pay this invoice, that's how I'll handle it. And I had that happen 2 years ago with Ubisoft that makes the game Assassin's Creed.
Okay.
The main character in that game has my artwork tattooed on his forearm.
Nice. Nice.
And it was actually my daughter who was playing that game on Xbox, and she comes into my studio and she goes, the main character of this game has your artwork on his forearm. I go, what are you talking about? I'd never played the game before. And
right.
She brings it up and shows it to me, and so I start doing some research and find some high-res images from the game developer site and put together kind of a letter, sent it to their legal counsel, documenting it, showing him my registration with the U.S. Copyright Office, and the lawyer basically said, I think this is reasonable, so we'll cut you a check. So it was pretty simple. So it's not hard. It's just knowing the right approach to take and the letter to write. So those are going to be some of the things that I'll talk about in the talk. But then when it's all said and done, I'll provide a takeaway that will give them templates they can use and different scenarios and how to respond to them.
Yeah, if there's anyone who's going to be giving that talk, it's got to be you or Jeff Fisher, because, as I said, if you follow either of you guys on Facebook and Twitter, it's ridiculous how much of your stuff gets stolen.
Yeah, it kind of gets old at times. I've learned to preemptively kind of protect myself. I kind of know when I'm creating certain art that it might be more popular in terms of people ripping it off, so I created a course for Linda where I just covered the illustrative style of tribal illustration. So the nice thing about the copyright is you can register a group of artwork as and copyright all your art on one page, and it still only costs about $45 to do that, and it protects each individual piece of artwork. So if somebody ever infringes upon the art, you're legally covered to go after that image, even though it's part of a group. So it's pretty inexpensive to protect yourself legally in that respect.
How long have you been actually registering your artwork with the Copyright Office? Is this something you've started with, or is it something that you've kind of built upon the way?
I started officially doing that back in around 2004, 2005. And I don't do it for everything. I just do it for the artwork that I think is going to be more than likely kind of, you know, ripped off or more popular. And it tends to be themes that are, like, for instance, there's a piece of artwork I did for a school district back in 2007. It was a Blackhawk, and that's one of the most ripped off pieces of art. And I think it's just because the theme is such a popular theme for a lot of different things, whether it's a company who uses the name Blackhawk, radio station has a couple radio stations have ripped that off a few times, several schools, and they're all people I've had to kind of approach and go after and say, look, you can't be using that. You don't own it. You didn't pay to use it. And one story that was kind of an uncomfortable situation is I got contacted by a designer, and he said, hey, I just saw your hawk artwork on a billboard when I was driving home from work, and he spent the next day at lunch documenting all these things with my artwork on it and sent it to me. Come to find out, a radio station, I forget, at some Hawk FM 101 or whatever, was using it. And it turns out that their in-house designer had just pulled my image from the internet and just basically auto-traced it and then used it. And she just happened to be on vacation when I notified the station manager. So she kind of got a rude awakening when she came back from vacation and all this was kind of dropped into her lap. But we worked out an agreement where they could keep using it, just knowing that they didn't own the artwork. So
sure. All right. Well, that's great. I look forward to hearing the whole talk and how Chicago in, I think, May 4th through 8th or something like that. For all of you listeners, you can use the code REFLEX to save $50 off your registration. We'll be right back with Von Glitchko. All right, welcome back. So Vaughn, you've been illustrating, you said, for what, 20 years now professionally?
Yeah.
What's the biggest thing you've seen change over the last 20 years in the illustration field? Either basically on is it the digital stuff, or is there a different way that people contact illustrators than there used to be, or what's kind of been the change that you've seen?
Wow, there's how do you say it? There, even my art rep and other art reps he's talked to have seen a kind of a disruption within our industry with how illustrators are approached, find work, and work with designers and creative directors and art directors. Illustrators as a whole is kind of like a sub-community under the umbrella of design. They never like to think of themselves like that, but they like to think of themselves as a separate community when in reality they fall under the category of design, because that's where all their work comes from. Now, I know there's a lot of illustrators who are trying to push into fine arts and they have art shows. That's great, but
yeah, that's we're not really talking about that. I mean, those people, that's a different field, and that's great. If you can be a fine artist, wonderful. Yeah.
Well, I tend to view that as it's the exception, certainly not the norm, and it's a finite opportunity for a select few. But when it comes to illustration, it's a lot of designers don't know how to work with illustrators. And as we keep moving forward with digital, there's a lot of new art directors and creative directors who frankly, their creative process is so kind of haphazard that they don't even know how to work with illustrators. A lot of times I'll get contacted and they'll be saying, well, can you draw a turtle? And I'm like, well, yeah, here's examples of my work that kind of aligns with the genre you're thinking. Now, I may not have drawn a turtle, but I've drawn a bear, an alligator, you know, all these other characters.
Sure.
But I can do that. And they don't want to move forward with it because they have to see a turtle before they can hire me to do a turtle for them. It's really weird.
But that's common. I mean, that sounds like something that designers deal with too. I mean, not, you know, where you say, hey, can you do this type of project? Sure, here's a bunch of stuff that's related. Not exactly the same.
Yes and no. I mean, I just think there's a lot of creative directors I worked with in the past who you didn't have to hold their hand so much. They had the ability to look at something in a pretty rough format and see the potential of where it could go, whether or not it aligned literally with the theme or their specific project. And I think that's the gap that's harder to bridge now. You really have to market yourself in a different way. And I think the more you know design, the more you know design, the easier it is to work with a designer who may not have the capacity to illustrate himself, but you can kind of explain things in such a way that makes it easier. Now, digital is always changing the way, you know, especially illustrators work, and it's only getting better. And my daughter, since she's new to the industry, she thinks in a totally different way in terms of leveraging technology. And frankly, she's kind of disrupting the way I think about some things, because she's showing me that even my own views, as I've looked at certain ways and certain workflows, don't need to always stay that way. And so she's helping me to kind of learn new things that I never thought I'd be learning. So that's kind of exciting. I'm glad I have somebody like that that can push me, because it's easy to get comfortable with where you're at and not try new things or change. And I'm always trying to do that, but I thought I was doing pretty good. And then my daughter's kind of clued me in on a few things that's changed the way I've worked over the past couple of years.
Yeah. And I mean, like even for me in design, every single software program that we work in other than Photoshop is different than what I learned on. And Photoshop is done. I mean, it's not the same Photoshop I learned on either, but, and so it's like, if the tools change this much, sometimes you can change the processes a little bit as well. You know, you don't have to be stuck in the way you were thinking when you had to deal with stat cams and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man. That brings back a lot of memories. Photoshop is probably one of my favorite pieces of software, just because you can give 10 different people the exact same project and they can come back and produce a great solution, but each of them could have used a completely different methodology to pull it off. That's what I like about Photoshop, is it's very adaptive to the individual's you know, their choice on how they want to work, whereas other software...
I'm not sure if there's a single person that understands how to use more than 20% of Photoshop's features.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean they're not completely proficient with it. But, and then someone else is like, because if you start working with someone else, you're like, I didn't know what he could even do this. Like, what?
Well, that's how I usually learn things in Photoshop. I see somebody do something, I go, whoa, wait a minute, how'd you do that? And they explain it. And then from that point forward, that gets added to, you know, my knowledge base of that app. But kind of what I'm talking about, though, is like if you look at Illustrator, the way their engineers have written the program, it's very rigid in certain ways, and you're forced to use those methodologies. You can't adapt it to how you think it should work, whereas Photoshop is so fluid that it isn't just one way to do something. You can do the exact same thing in different ways that you prefer, and I guess that's what I'm trying to say, is that's why I like it so much, is it's a complex program that I probably know maybe 10% of it, but it was never really a big hassle to learn and plug into it, where I still struggle with Illustrator at times, and I've been using it like every day since CS2.
No, I understand.
And I think that says a lot. It's like, I don't consider myself a newbie at all, but I'm always butting heads with the people in the Adobe community who are evangelists, you know, the ones who, they know the software inside and out, and they teach about all the various features, many of them that I haven't touched in like 10 years, because there's no reason why I'd use the pucker and bloat or the stupid lens flare tool, you know, all the stuff that any designer worth their weight in salt would never even approach, let alone use. But they know the software so well inside and out that I run into something and then they don't understand why I'm frustrated over it. And it's not because I don't understand how to use the software. It's just that if people who were the evangelists actually created a lot of design, actually created work, and instead of just learning how to use tools, it's like they would understand the frustration. And there's a developer that I know who's working on software, and the cool thing about it is that the primary coder behind that software they're working on used to be a designer, so he understands what designers run into, and that's why their software that they do have out now is so people love it so much. It's because it understands the user, and that's been my big complaint with Adobe for a long time, is I keep telling them that their main problem is their engineers, they don't create anything. They don't know why the way it works is bad the way it works, and why it shouldn't be done that way. And that's kind of been a bone of contention for me, because I've pointed out certain things and tried to explain it in a way that says, look, this is how designers are going to think on this. This is how they're going to approach this. And then the end result is this, and it really shouldn't be, because you've now made the process harder, where digital is supposed to make things easier. And I don't know, it tends to get political at times, anytime you have a big company. And so it's frustrating, but so far there's people I know in Adobe who they like the fact I point out stuff and I complain about stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's the only way they're going to fix those things.
Yeah, but you know what? They've known about some bugs for almost going on a decade now, and they still haven't fixed them. I just don't think they care about some things. They just, frankly, and I don't understand it, I guess, now, because with their new financial model with Creative Cloud, they're getting their pound of flesh every month, I haven't upgraded since CS whatever, so I'm not paying for anything. Well, that's going to weed out all those people. Everybody will be paying a monthly subscription, so I don't understand the attitude.
Yeah, and I think part of the monthly subscription when they originally came out with it, because we talked about it and stuff, and we're on the monthly subscription here now, is that part of their reasoning was that they could do more frequent updates to fix those bugs. So I don't know if they have updates to come out all the time. I don't know what they fix, but I do know they do those.
Well, they have fixed a few things, but what that also means is that it also introduces new bugs at a greater rate as well.
Right.
And that's why I turn off the auto update of the app, because when I had it on, for instance, I've been on Creative Cloud with Creative Cloud CS6, well, they had updated the app and it broke this function that I used all the time, where it binding an action to an F key, and it wouldn't work, and they never fixed it after they broke it. And so that's why I turned off the auto update, because I want to wait until what people say about the new updates, and if they break anything, then I don't have to deal with it until they fix it.
That makes sense. Well, Vaughn, where do you see now the illustration field going, like, in the next 20 years? Do you have any, like, wild predictions for us? Like, how we're going to work with illustrators, how illustrators are going to work? What do you see the big change being?
I think all of these touch applications that Adobe is working on tablets and everything, is eventually going to move into the desktop versions. And they're going to embed those kind of hand-drawing features within the desktop versions of Adobe Illustrator. That'd be my guess.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to seeing if that happens. But it's great talking with you again, and we'll see you in Chicago.
Okay. Nice talking with you too. Look forward to hanging out.
The Reflex Blue Show with Donovan Meary is hosted at 36point.com. Music by Dustlab. Find out more at myspace.com/dustlab. Thank you.